It's Tuesday, October 19th. When someone doesn't show up for work, it's an inconvenience. But what if it was a third of your police force? We start here.
It's a pretty straightforward, non-intrusive process.
With vaccine mandates kicking in, employees are openly defying their bosses and waiting for consequences.
He needs to stop publicly telling officers to not follow the rules, so he's been muzzled a bit.
We'll take you to Chicago, where cops are naming some consequences of their own. One of America's most legendary diplomats dies from COVID.
He knew that that was pretty much the final nail in Saddam Hussein's coffin.
How will Colin Powell be remembered? And while you were sleeping this weekend, a Chinese missile might have been flying over your head.
They don't want to talk about it because it scares the hell out of them.
Why we might have just entered a new era and a new Cold War. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey.
My message to unvaccinated Americans is this. What more is there to wait for?
When President Biden took the unprecedented step of telling businesses around the country, you've got to make sure your employees are getting vaccinated against COVID-19, or at least get tested for it, that was a signal.
We've been patient, but our patience is wearing thin.
It was a signal to businesses with more than 100 employees, sure, but even to the smaller ones not affected by the policy change, this signal says the government's got your back. Vaccinated employees are now an industry standard. But then Governor Greg Abbott in Texas put forward his own policy.
Now, Abbott writing in this new order, quote, the Biden administration is now bullying many private entities into imposing COVID-19 vaccine mandates.
A statewide policy banning employers from firing those vaccine holdouts if the employee has a personal belief against the shot.
We're going to continue to implement the law, which the President of the United States has the ability, the authority, the legal authority to do.
And in a battle with the federal government, states rarely win. But this was also a signal, right? A signal to other states, some of which have now instituted their own mandate bans, but also to workers around the country, saying, if you don't want to get vaccinated, don't let your employer tell you you have to. Well, yesterday, as the week began, Washington State's football coach was fired after refusing to get the vaccine.
I will never vaccinate my kids.
Okay.
I will never vaccinate.
So you would pull them out.
I will pull them out.
Parents in California said they were pulling their kids out of school over a vaccine mandate that will kick in once vaccines are fully approved for age groups, just like 10 other vaccines their children were already required to get. And in Chicago, police officers are under new orders to report their vaccination status to the city.
I really hope that the men and women of the Chicago Police Department, who have been fed a lot of stuff, that's the most polite, appropriate word I can use in this forum, are not going to ruin their careers over going to a website and saying yes or no.
Well, yesterday, despite dire warnings, we learned more than a third of them have thus far said no. Let's start the day with ABC's Alex Perez in Chicago. Alex, has this devolved into a full-fledged standoff?
Yeah, Brad, at this point, it really does seem like a standoff, and it's unclear right now who's going to be the one to blink first, both sides really standing firmly.
We know that the best way to get to the end of COVID-19 is by getting vaccinated, pure and simple.
The mayor has made it very clear that her goal is to have as many people as possible in the city of Chicago vaccinated, and starting with city employees. So she issued this mandate back in August that has taken into effect now. And the mandate, just to be clear, does not at this point force employees to be vaccinated, but it does force them to report their status when it comes to vaccination.
The only way that we can make this real is we've got to hold people accountable.
I do not believe the city has the authority to mandate that to anybody, let alone that information about your medical history.
That's where we're having some issues here, because the police union says that's an invasion of privacy. Those are private health records that should not have to be shared.
We have no assurances from the city that that is secure, what that information is going to entail as far as going forward, who it's going to be shared with.
And so the union president representing all those officers and the mayor have really been at odds the last few weeks as this has been going on. And at this point, it's really, we just don't know what exactly is going to happen.
In Chicago, 35% of the police department's officers haven't reported their vaccination status and risk losing their jobs.
I never thought we would ever get to a place that I would feel it mandatory to walk away
based on someone telling me what to do with my health.
And the question, of course, is like, what happens if they don't? And the answer we're getting from Chicago is we're not anywhere near firings yet. We're not even really near unpaid suspensions that you'd think would be the next step. But I'm wondering about consequences for the city, Alex. What happens if cops start walking out?
I think, Brad, what we're seeing here also is sort of the tale of two stories, and it depends really who you ask.
My understanding is a very small number, even after given those opportunities, are not doing it.
The mayor on one end is sort of saying the problem is not as big as it seems. There aren't as many non-compliant officers as it appears, and maybe they haven't heard that they need to do this. So there's still this campaign to sort of make sure the message gets out. But the union president really publicly saying,
if this mayor doesn't stop vilifying the police and start focusing on public safety, you are going to have a rash number of retirements in the very immediate future here.
And so the issue really becomes, is that going to put people on the streets of Chicago in danger if there's a staffing shortage? And they're saying and have said repeatedly that, you know, you can lose your job if you don't comply. But when exactly that enforcement would begin, that sort of remains unclear. Now, the president of the police union has gotten in trouble himself.
Do not fill out the portal information.
The judge granting a temporary restraining order banning FOP President John Catanzara from making any further public comments urging his members not to comply with the reporting mandate.
The way it works, the police department is not allowed to go on strike. And he has been publicly, the police union president, basically telling officers to not comply.
This is very clearly not a job action, not a call for a strike, none of that illegal stuff that I'm sure the city is going to try and make it out to be.
And the city brought this to a judge. The judge then issued an injunction telling the president of the police union that he needs to stop publicly telling officers to not follow the rules. So he's been muzzled a bit.
Whatever they'd been told, frankly, in many instances, they weren't told the truth. And so there is, I think, an eye-opening moment for many people that this actually is a pretty straightforward, non-intrusive process.
The police union and city officials, the mayor, they have been head-to-head for a long time. But this one's getting a little ugly right now just because vaccines are becoming such an issue all across the country.
Well, that's the thing. At this point, it is still all about words, really, threats and leverage. Like, no one's been fired yet in Chicago. And those threats, we should note, don't always translate to action. Houston Methodist, the health system, says when it decided to implement a vaccine mandate for its 25,000 employees, about 15% of its workforce was unvaccinated. So you're thinking, wow, 6 or 7 months after vaccines come online, you'd expect these are the pretty hardcore folks. We saw the protests. In a matter of weeks, faced with actually losing their job, less than 2% of those workers were still refusing to get vaccinated. So we'll see whether these threats in Chicago actually come to fruition, but really high stakes. Alex Perez, thank you.
No problem, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, presidents wish they had as much love from the public as he did. The life and death of Colin Powell after the break.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Yesterday, the U.S. lost one of its most respected men to ever put on a uniform.
A distinguished career in the field and at the highest levels of our government.
He served two tours in Vietnam and has had many important assignments around the world.
An Army Corps commander, a national security advisor.
General Colin Powell advised presidents from Ronald Reagan to George H.W. Bush to Bill Clinton. George W. Bush named him Secretary of State. And all along the way, he was making history while also defying expectations.
Why don't you want to be president?
I've never had any political ambitions, and
I realized that I had an obligation to serve my country, and I always wanted to be able to do that. But
yesterday, his family announced that Colin Powell had died at the age of 84 from complications from COVID-19. ABC's chief global affairs correspondent Martha Raddatz is here. Martha, you're based in D.C., right? A city where it's tough to inspire admiration across half of anyone, half the populace, and yet it was just clear from their reactions how universally kind of revered he is.
Yeah, those were the days, Brad, and I remember so vividly how popular Colin Powell was. You could not travel anywhere with him without him being sought out. Mm. And not in a kind of, you know, rock star way, but absolute admiration and respect for what he had done in his career, for where he had been, and frankly, how hard it was for him to get there.
Powell's American story started modestly in Harlem, where he was born to Jamaican immigrants. He grew up in the South Bronx and attended the City College of New York.
Colin Powell grew up from pretty humble beginnings. He said he didn't do well in college, didn't really like it.
And when I finally did graduate after those 4.5 years, the faculty was enormously relieved. And they were content for me to go in the Army, let the Army worry about him, just be gone.
He liked being in uniform. He liked that sort of structure. And I think that is where Colin Powell really truly got his start.
And I did well as a young lieutenant. I never thought I would get far beyond that. Maybe I get promoted to major at some point. But that was all I asked for.
Colin, welcome, sir.
Colin, congratulations.
He broke through so many barriers. And to become the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, I know he was the first black Secretary of State.
It's a great day when a son of the South Bronx succeeds to the office first held by Thomas Jefferson.
That was a tough road to hoe on the way up there.
The young Captain Powell, who was once refused service at a lunch counter in Georgia, when I came home from Vietnam after a year of fighting for my country, that Captain Powell was able to become General Powell, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff for the Armed Forces of the United States.
Well, and it was interesting that he also, despite all that, he also didn't neatly fit in the boxes that are so often expected in politics, right? Like you said, a black man serving in these leadership roles where a black man had never served before, a black Republican in an age where that was becoming rarer and rarer, and like a general who was also a famous diplomat who even disagreed with some of the presidents he served.
He did have disagreements, and I think he had disagreements and spoke his mind all the way, probably in the Army, as much as you can do that in the Army.
Trust, but cut the cards. Be careful, be cautious, encourage if we think it's in our national interest, hold back if we think it's not in our national interest.
I also think what people forget about someone like Colin Powell, you know, he was a general, he was Secretary of State. He preferred the title general because I do think he was a soldier at heart. And people forget that good soldiers don't really want to go to war. That's the last option. So that he was both a warrior and a diplomat says so much about Colin Powell.
Leading up to the first Persian Gulf War, Powell favored continued sanctions over military action. But once committed to war, he put forth the Powell Doctrine.
Our strategy to go after this army is very, very simple. First, we're going to cut it off, and then we're going to kill it.
Of course, he was the architect of the first Gulf War, which was considered a success. But the second, Iraq War, was what stained his reputation truly, truly forever.
Indeed, the facts and Iraq's behavior show that Saddam Hussein and his regime are concealing their efforts to produce more weapons of mass destruction.
He regretted his actions during that time. He stood before the United Nations in February of 2003.
The satellite imagery is more open to interpretation. Secretary Powell said this was a satellite picture of a storage area for chemical or biological weapons.
When George Bush was threatening to go to war in Iraq and oust Saddam Hussein, and Colin Powell had so much credibility, and to stand in front of the UN, he knew what that meant. He knew that that was pretty much the final nail in Saddam Hussein's coffin.
And unless we act, we are confronting an even more frightening future.
That was it. That was it for many members of Congress, too. If Colin Powell says we have to do it, if Colin Powell says we should do it, we'll do it. And it was a mistake. It was a huge mistake. The intelligence was flawed.
We learned today not only of his death, but of his private battle with COVID. He was fully vaccinated, but now we've learned of his other private health battles that put him at increased risk.
Hey, Martha, I should end on, because there's already been speculation, I think, and confusion over his death, because his family said he died from complications of COVID, but that he was also vaccinated, right? I mean, was this, do we know if this was a straight-up breakthrough infection? Because I got to imagine Americans would be concerned hearing that.
He was fully vaccinated, about to get his booster shot, but he came down with COVID. But he had complicating factors to begin with. He was battling Parkinson's disease. Now, I say this now, he was keeping that very private, but had Parkinson's and also multiple myeloma, which is it's a blood cancer, which certainly made him more vulnerable, far more vulnerable.
Right, and a lot of cancer patients have drugs that make them immunocompromised. You mentioned the underlying conditions, and doctors have said there will be breakthrough infections, but the numbers, especially with deaths, are so, so small that this is very much the exception. And since vaccinations also curb transmission, more people being vaccinated actually protects 84-year-olds around us. So something to keep in mind there. All right, Martha Raddatz in Washington. Thank you.
You bet, Brad.
Colin Powell, of course, came out of the era of the Cold War. Two superpowers fighting for dominance, creating new military technology, often resulting in a ton of costs and a ton of paranoia. Now, once again, there are two major superpowers in the world, the US and China. But we haven't seen nearly the same type of hostility, mainly because one country's military has been so completely superior. The US is not sitting around worrying about Chinese bombs. Well, that might have changed this weekend.
This summer, China managed to launch a nuclear-capable hypersonic missile. They launched it into space. It circled the Earth before cruising towards its target.
Two big things happened here. One, according to the scoop from the Financial Times, was that China tested this really advanced weapon. Two, was that the U.S. apparently did not know this was even in the works. And so all of a sudden, without warning, some military analysts were calling this Cold War 2.0. Colonel Stephen Ganyard is a former Marine, former State Department official. He's now an ABC News contributor. And Colonel Ganyard, there's still a lot of uncertainty, but from what you've gathered, what is this weapon?
In some ways, Brad, it's Back to the Future. This is a kind of weapon that was actually talked about in the 1950s, and that is being able to rain nuclear weapons down from space.
Over the next decade, China's nuclear warhead stockpile is projected to at least double in size as China expands and modernizes its nuclear forces.
So it might be helpful to start with a little definition. What does hypersonic mean? So hypersonic means anything that goes over Mach 5 to about Mach 10. So your airliner at its fastest goes at about 0.85, so less than 1 Mach. This is 5 times at least faster than that.
Wow.
So very, very fast. The other thing is that this weapon sort of cruises through the way, way upper atmosphere at between 100 and 300,000 feet. But we are blind between 100,000 and 300,000 feet, right where these hypersonic weapons fly. Much less that, we can't even do anything about them if we could see them.
As of the end of last month, September of 2021, the PRC had launched at least 250 ballistic missiles this year. All of this is concerning, especially concerning, I should say, given the PRC's lack of transparency.
So what's unique about this Chinese weapon? It actually launched up into space into low Earth orbit like it was a satellite. It traveled around the world at least once, but then it ejected this hypersonic weapon that is nuclear capable, at least it's theorized, and it came very close to hitting a target that they were aiming at in China.
As you might expect, China is denying all this. They say it wasn't even a hypersonic missile. It was actually a routine test to verify reusable technology. But this test was shrouded in secrecy back in the summer.
The Chinese were actually kind of smart. They looked at the kinds of weapons and the kinds of defenses that the U.S. has been spending hundreds of billions of dollars on for decades, starting with Ronald Reagan's Star Wars, going all the way up to the interceptors that we're building and buying today, that were all pointed north because that's where the expected threat from the Soviet Union, now Russia, and from North Korea. That's where the missiles would come from.
The interceptors we have up here, I would just tell you, ladies and gentlemen, that Alaska in many ways is the absolute center of the defense of our country.
So the Chinese said, well, they're not looking to the south, so we'll just come in from the south. So this weapon that they demonstrated in August has the ability to come in over the South Pole and hit us from behind, where we have no ability to look, no ability to knock these hypersonic weapons down, and we will have no idea if we're under attack, and the first thing we'll see will be mushroom clouds in major metropolitan U.S. areas.
Wait, so that's terrifying, right? And there are military analysts saying, hold on, you know, we don't know exactly what China put up there. We don't know how much this resembles the worst case scenarios. But supposing that is all correct, how would we not have seen that coming?
Well, it's not easy to get intelligence out of China. And the U.S. has been working on its own hypersonic missiles, and we're not doing a very good job. They tried testing one the other day on a B-52, and they couldn't get it even to ignite, much less leave the wing.
You're saying we haven't even built this ourselves. Like we not forget the defenses. We have not even been able to create this weapon.
We can't even do something that we should have been able to do in the 1950s.
The report, which can't be independently verified by ABC News, says that U.S. intelligence services had no idea that China was so far ahead.
We've been spending money on Afghanistan and Iraq, and while that's been going on, the Chinese have been coming after us and developing capabilities that we can't match, we can't detect, and we can't defend against.
So is this, in your mind, Cold War 2.0? Has that begun? And what would that even look like in comparison to the way these countries get along now?
The U.S. has been in conflict with China for a long time. It's just that the U.S. does not realize it. We are at a strategic disadvantage, and it is probably the first time since the end of World War II, maybe 1945, 46, that the U.S. has been at a strategic disadvantage to any other country. We are behind, and the Chinese have the edge. So watch what happens on Capitol Hill. If you look at the reaction from defense officials that have talked about this, first of all, they don't want to talk about it because it scares the hell out of them. And the second of all is they have no good answer. Why didn't we know about this and why don't we have a capability? So I think you're going to quietly see a whole bunch of money being pushed on Capitol Hill towards other kinds of missile capabilities and more hypersonic defense and defeat capability. So there'll be lots of extra money, or they're going to move money around to go away from things that in the past have aided us in fighting insurgencies around the world and counterterrorism. But the threat that the Chinese have just proven is scaring the hell out of everybody on the Pentagon side of the river and on Capitol Hill as well.
And like you said, all that money has an impact on people, whether or not China or the U.S. ever actually attack each other. That money is spent regardless. All right. Colonel Stephen Gagnier, thank you so much.
Thanks, Brad.
Okay, we're going to take one more quick break. When we return, it's just like a pack of stray dogs if those dogs all had foot-long teeth. One last thing is next.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
And one last thing. Invasive species are a dangerous thing, especially when the invasive species is the size of a pickup truck. Recently, wildlife officials in Colombia have been trying to control the population of a growing herd of hippopotamus. You might say, wait, how did hippopotamus get into Colombia? Well, the answer is the world's most famous drug dealer. In the 1980s, cocaine kingpin Pablo Escobar wanted a small zoo on his property. He smuggled in lots of animals, including four hippos. Well, when authorities seized Escobar's property years later, they didn't know what to do with the hippos, so they just left them there, the way people leave feral cats to roam around. And it turns out South America is a hippo haven, like a hippo dice. The land is lusher than Africa's, it's less prone to drought, and big bonus, there aren't any lions.
They start to grow up, to reproduce, and now they become a really, really big environmental problem in our country.
So this little herd went from four hippos to close to 100 now. Scientists say in 15 years left unchecked, the population could explode past 1,000.
The people is normal, would live normal with the hippo, but they are really, really a big danger for the community.
So they said, we got to get rid of them. There's just one problem. These hippos have become very popular. Towns have adopted them as local mascots, even though they're famously temperamental.
It's angry.
There's a hippo following us, so we got to run here.
The hippo, who was apparently protecting her baby, then got under their two-man canoe and launched the couple into the air.
Immediately, I was grabbed and pulled underneath the water.
So officials decided rather than exterminating the hippos, they'd sterilize them, which begs the question, who wants to hunt down this herd of hippos in an area where the ground was once littered with cocaine and tell these animals their days of mating are over? Hippos, man. One minute they're wiggling those ears, the next minute they're chomping on the nearest human. No, thank you. Hey, from hippos to hip-hop, a really cool project from ABC is up on Hulu right now. The Real Queens of Hip-Hop, a documentary chronicling how central women have been to the evolution of hip-hop. So we're talking to MC Light, we're talking Salt-N-Pepa, Lil' Kim, Missy Elliott. You definitely want to check this out. Much cooler than the hip-hop-opotamus. I'm Brad Mielke. See you tomorrow.